And I'm old sport. I'm Adam. This is a weird one this week. This is a not a conventional Zillennial pick, I would say. But I think we'll
Yeah.
justify it, I think.
You know, like, we talked about it at the end of last week's episode, and I think that the second I thought about this movie, I realized that it really is Zillennial. I feel like 2013 was a big turning point in, like, all of Zillennials' lives for some reason. This made me very nostalgic for that era of, like, me first starting to get into movies on Twitter and also Tumblr. And the soundtrack really just had that grasp on all of us.
I was gonna say that because I think while it does seem like an unconventional pick from the outside looking in, anyone that's like our age, I think they inherently like get it. You know what I mean? Because like this is a very it was a movie that had a chokehold on our generation, I think, for even if you didn't see the movie, like the gifs of it, like the aesthetics of it, especially if you were like a Tumblr person around this era, I feel like it was very so prominent
And
back in
then,
the day.
like, your prom was Great Gatsby
Yep,
themed.
my
Like,
homecoming
that
that year was
impact on
Gatsby.
it.
Yep, it really was.
And it's also funny because I feel like this is Zillennial in that this movie came out when we were all, like, reading it in, like, our
Yes.
junior year of high school.
I was reading it.
Iconic.
I read it my fresh because this came out my freshman year of high school.
Oh yeah, I was a sophomore, not a junior. Yeah.
Well, this was 2013. You were a sophomore in 2013?
May 2013.
Because I
Yeah.
was like I
Yeah.
would wait, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I was a
Because that was
freshman.
like I had this is like a timeline that only that doesn't matter to our listeners. That was like when I like met Sean.
Right.
Spring
Yeah.
2013. Yeah, I was a sophomore.
Weird. Yeah,
Yeah.
I was a freshman.
What year did you graduate out of?
2016.
Okay, I graduated 2015.
Wild. Yeah, it's just one of
Yeah.
those things, I guess.
I feel like we always like forget that and then we're
Yeah.
like, what the fuck are you talking about? That wasn't that year.
No, I
Yeah.
had this shout to AOK. I had this discussion with Murphy the other day. Yeah, same thing. Like we're all the
Yeah.
same age, but he graduated 2015 and I 2016 for some reason.
Yeah.
Kind of
Florida.
crazy.
The Florida of it all.
Florida of it all. Yeah, no, I read this in so I read the book in 2012. And when I think if I'm not mistaken, because I took AP English in high school. And if I'm not mistaken, I think this is the literal first book I read. If not the first one, it was like in the first like semester at least.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the first one was To Kill a Mockingbird, and this was probably like a second or third, I think. But I remember I was reading it while the trailers for this were coming out. So like I was like when I was reading it, I was like imagining what the movie would be like as I was reading it, which is like arguably not how you should read a F. Scott Fitzgerald book for the first time. But it was kind of fun to read it in that lens as a kid. And yeah, I think that's a great point. Yeah, we were all collectively like reading it around this time.
Yeah,
Or at
I
least we
didn't
were in high
realize
school.
that. I didn't realize that until just now. But
That's a yeah, it's kind of a that's what makes this such a deep cut for Zillennial culture, I think, because I mean, did you like Great Gatsby, like the book, when you were in high school, or is it just like something that you had to read?
I did like it. I feel like I generally liked a lot of the books that I read in school, which is why I just spent like 7 years graduating with an English degree.
Right.
But it definitely depends on the teacher that I have when I'm reading the books, like my
Right.
level of liking them. Like I've loved books that I didn't even imagine myself liking because like the teacher was amazing. Going off of that, were you a kid that like became besties with your English teachers and like the entire English department?
Not all of them. I mean, I was like chill with all of them. I remember my freshman year English teacher. He was cool. He was like an old Southern guy. He was very like strict, but he was like chill. Like if you got along with him, like if you did your work, he was cool. All my like succeeding like English teachers, I have like no relationship with. Weirdly enough, for some, and that's weird because I was a very English, like I did great in English every year. I was actually like more buddy buddy with all my history teachers, which I think we talked about on National Treasure, I want to say. I was pretty buddy buddy with them, and my TV production teacher I was really close with, but not for like a trying, it just like it seems like in high school, especially with the AP English teachers, they were very like not interested in like forming a relationship with you. They were, it was very to the point, it felt like.
But I feel like when this movie came out, like it was just like very controversial, and that I'm like, I wonder what like the English teachers are gonna think of this movie. Like that was like the first thought in my head. Especially like it was funny because the one teacher that like I like loved that I actually read the book with like in class, she actually really liked it, and that was what made me be like, oh, this is a good movie then, that's cool. Like I knew that I liked it, but I was like, oh, it's good because my English teacher that I'm reading this book with likes the movie.
Yeah, I, if I'm not mistaken, I think I saw this movie on one of the last days of school, that year, because it was either, like, I don't think it was, like, one of the last days of school, actually. I think it was, like, one of the last days of testing in the school year, because I distinctly remember, like, I had a half day the day it came out, and I, like, went to the movie theater immediately after I got off the bus to go see it, and, no, that's not true. I went to a screening of this movie on a Monday before it came out. And I remember having a really bad experience with it the first time I saw it. Because I was, you know, like how creaky Regal theaters are before they're renovated? Like those super narrow aisles, creaky ass seats. The Regal that I actually go to now, I saw it there before they renovated to recliners. And I saw it in 3D. In the very top row, all like the literal very left seat, the aisle seat in the top left hand corner of like a 400 seat theater, and I swear to God, the screen felt like a 1,000 miles away. I could not see shit. It was so, the 3D was awful. I was right next to the speakers. I had a headache. I did not enjoy it. But I knew, I was like, that was not the movie's fault. It was just like my predicament. So I went back to see it on Friday, and I liked it a lot on Friday. And then I kind of got like obsessed with it that summer, which I feel like a lot of people did our age. Like I kind of like went back to it a few times. I remember going to see it a third time at my Dollar Theater, like in July or something, just because I wanted to see it again. And yeah. And I think this like time watching it for the pod, it was like my fifth or sixth time seeing it total.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie so many times. Like it's one of those movies that I can't like recite every line of dialogue for, like some Zillennial movies. But like as scenes were playing out, I remembered them to a T. Like the musical cues in this movie, dear God. Like I remember them so vividly, like sitting in the theater for it, you know what I mean? having Kanye, Jay-Z, and Lana,
literally,
like all in the first hour or two. Come on,
literally iconic. The soundtrack, like I think this was like one of my first, like this and the Bling Ring soundtrack were probably like my first like saved albums on Spotify.
Right.
That I would just, like, re-listen to over and over and over again. Like, if you scroll, like, all the way down to my Spotify, like, this is probably, like, one of the first ones that I saved. It's just so, like, cool.
Yeah.
I don't know, just, like, the mix of, like, jazz and, like, rap and, like, orchestrations of like modern songs, and
yeah,
I think it's like it's so cool.
That's a great way to describe this movie. Cool. It's a very cool movie. I think I love, and this is, we'd be remiss to not bring up the fact of why we're talking about this movie this week, which is because Baz Luhrmann. I think I have to make a statement, actually.
You've been Elvis-pilled. I haven't been yet.
So, we're recording this on, what is today, Monday, June 20th? Elvis is not out to the general public yet.
Elvis has not left the building yet.
Elvis has not left the building. I will say on pod, I have talked about how much I do not want to see Elvis, how bad I think Elvis looks, how much I don't like Baz Luhrmann movies. And that is, like, true. I still hate Moulin Rouge. I think that movie fucking sucks. Like, I hate that movie. And I don't like Romeo and Juliet, although I do think I owe it a second chance.
You should.
I haven't seen it since I was 15, I want to say. So I'll rewatch that eventually. That being said, I do like The Great Gatsby, obviously. I've said that back on the Moulin Rouge episode. I've always contended I like this movie. And then I, when going into Elvis the other day, I saw it on last Thursday night, I think. And I went in very ready to not like it, but it ended, and I turned to my girlfriend and I said, "I can admit when I'm wrong," and her jaw dropped. Like, she was very, because the entire like pre-up to like going into that theater, I was just like not having it, and I think she was genuinely shocked by the fact that I did it. Not only did I not dislike it, but I actually really liked it.
Did she like it?
She loved it, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, she loved it, but she kind of knew she was going to, so it wasn't like a shocking thing with her. But like, me actually enjoying it was like a big, like, everyone around me was like, "Wait, you liked it?" And I was like, "Yeah, guys." I can admit when I'm wrong about a movie, and I still contend the trailers for that movie are fucking annoying.
I love when he says, "It has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with us."
Yeah, that makes me laugh. Me and her, we have a quoting session between the lines of dialogue from the trailer. I'll be like, "Are you ready to fly?" And then she'll go, "Ready to fly." And my favorite is "They didn't like the way I was moving." Yeah, it's so funny. He Austin Butler is fantastic in the movie. He's really truly a star. I tweeted a while back disappointment that he was Fade Rautha in Dune Part 2, and I completely revoke that. He acts his ass off in this movie. It is one of the best performances I've seen in quite a while, and I take it all back. Like literally everything I said about this movie before going in, I eat my words. It was great. It was a really great movie. And I don't even like Elvis. I still don't even, like, even after seeing the movie, I don't like him. But
we're
the movie,
still questioning his impact on
society. Yeah, I'm not, like, Elvis pilled. I just think the movie is, like, extremely.
We need to stop saying pilled.
I'm not Elvis pilled, but I am, because like, he's still a very problematic figure. I just think the movie does a good job at like telling a very morally gray story, mostly through like unreliable narration, and I don't know, there's a pretty interesting theme or two about, you know, exploiting like other cultures for music, and also like how the music industry will like literally take a young talent and throw them into like a black hole and like give them like no support system whatsoever. And many times it feels like a horror movie because you're just seeing this dude like fucking spiral. It's really well done. I was thoroughly impressed with it. So here's my that's my Elvis review. So anyone that doesn't think I can eat my words, here you go. I was wrong. I admit it. And I'm glad to admit it because the movie deserves it. So I'm just glad we clear the elephant in the room, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The elephant that was not in the film Moulin Rouge, yeah. In which Nicole Kidman stood above and sang, you know what I'm talking about.
I wish I did.
Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby. No, go off.
No, I was just gonna say I can't think of like a better combination of like source material and filmmaker. Like sometimes there's just something that just like clicks. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like him doing Romeo and Juliet is like, okay, let's see what this guy can bring.
Yeah.
Him doing something that is like the only thing I can compare it to, like the feeling, it's like the feeling that I had when it was announced that Mike Flanagan was adapting Fall of the House of Usher.
Right.
I'm like, literally nothing makes more sense.
Yeah.
Like.
No, literally, yeah.
Baz Luhrmann doing something that is specifically about, like, opulence and, like, the danger of, like, over-the-top, like, consumption and, like.
Oh, yeah.
Like, absolutely no. Like, nobody is more fit for that than him.
I think that is, like, a very interesting element of this movie, where, I mean, the original Great Gatsby book is a very, I would say it is the defining piece of literature that, is about the Great Depression, and
it's
everything.
The Jazz Age. Like,
right.
It's, like, right before the Great Depression.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like, it has a lot of, like, pretext to that. Like, it's all building up to that without, ever being, taking place, except for, like, the flash forwards, you know what I mean? But, like, everything feels, like, looming over that, you know what I mean? Like, it's all, like, everything you see that's exciting in this movie feels like it's about to come crashing down at any moment. And I think Baz does a very good job at, like, making that exciting and entertaining and justifying that big budget. And also, do you remember, this was in 3D. Like, this was a big 3D movie when it came out.
I think I saw it in 3D because I remember it being like stunning. Like,
right.
For some reason, it just makes sense.
Right. No, yeah, it does. Did you see it in 3D? No.
I think I did. I might have. Yeah.
I remember the 3D for this movie being exceptional. Like, I remember it being really good. Especially like all the weirdly enough like the driving scenes, like that scene where he's speeding with Nick like throughout the city. I just remember like all the like telephone poles and stuff like just popping out of the screen, and like the hood of the car would like pop out. That's what I love about 3D, because like 3D is not about, at its best, it's not about gimmicks, it's about adding like depth of frame and like just like adding detail and like making it feel like just depth of the picture, you know. That's really what I like from 3D movies. Mm-hmm. Like one of the worst 3D movies I've seen in recent memory was Jungle Cruise, because they did nothing to add to the depth of the frame, which you had every opportunity to make that cool, and they just didn't do it. But you know, you see stuff like Gatsby where they really adds to the story a little bit, you know. It makes it all the more like inviting and immersive, so to speak.
Yeah, because like the environments are like, you're supposed to feel like how massive this house is,
yeah,
and how like deep this crowd goes, like how many people deep.
Yeah.
So it just like makes sense, and I think that he uses CGI in like a really interesting way.
Yeah.
Because everything in his movies feels like fake.
Yes.
But like not to a fault.
No, it literally like adds to this movie. And that's like a very tricky balancing act. You're right. Like, I think that's something that could have very easily, maybe under a lesser director, been a downfall, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like an over reliance on CGI. But I actually think this movie strikes a very good balance. It's almost like George Lucas-esque at points, where, like I said this a few weeks ago on the pod, I can't remember what episode, but maybe it was the Jurassic Park one, where I said the prequels get so much shit because some of the CGI is dated, and there are admittedly some scenes in that movie where he goes overboard with the CGI. But people also forget the prequels have like really good sets. They also have like really good practical effects and sets and like great scenery on location too, you know? It's just the dated CGI takes away from that in some people's minds. And this is like one of those situations where the CGI is really good, but also there's like genuine shots of like just like beautiful architecture, or like the outside of like Nick's house, like it's or like just the vibrance of it all. Like even like the color palettes, like when they're in like the hotel room and it's all like red, like the color palette of this movie is insane. It's truly a very colorful movie, which is something that I appreciate. I don't know, like I love that he knows how to like express and convey emotions through like color and schemes and aesthetic. It's a really impressive quality that he has as a filmmaker. Even though I can't like I don't like all of his movies, I think that is undeniably something he's very talented at. Yeah.
It's very interesting. So I have a list on Letterboxd. I feel like I brought this up, called Long Island Cinema. And it's the only place in the world that you can see like Elaine May's A New Leaf next to like Book of Henry. And it's just like any movie basically that I see that mentions or takes place on Long Island is on
Right.
that list. So it's extremely interesting that this was all shot in Australia, but like
Right.
all of it is inspired by specific places on Long Island that I have been to. Like there's like a garden, like it's like you can like tour like the grounds of like a garden, and I go there, like it's like a mansion, but you could like walk around and like look at the gardens, but they have
Right.
like Christmas light shows and stuff there. And it's literally like the direct inspiration for like Daisy's mansion in the
Right.
movie. It's just like very interesting that they like rebuilt places that I've been on a soundstage.
That is like
It's,
really cool.
yeah.
Like it, yeah, I mean there are, I mean you mentioned it like when you're talking about the 3D part of this movie, but like truly like some of like the designs and like the true scale of it is just, it's really awe-inspiring. And like watching it on HBO last night, they actually like it was very like the quality was really good, and like I was just kind of like stunned for most of the movie. I'm like I forgot how beautiful it really is. And like again, that's even aside from the CGI and the visuals, like just like the literal buildings, like the like everything is just so, it's exactly like what it feels like what F. Scott Fitzgerald was like trying to convey perfectly. Like that's what I love about it. Like because the book is like very specific. Like it's very detailed and explaining to you like what things look like, what people look like, sound like, what the places look like and sound like and smell like. And like in every frame of this movie, it feels like he tries to tackle that with accuracy, and he tries to visualize it in a very ravishing way. And like it works. It works completely. I mean that first party scene too, like the first Gatsby party that you go to in this movie, it's like it's awe-inspiring. Like there's no other word for it. You know what I mean? Like that's the best word I have is awe-inspiring. It's insane. Like what he does with this movie.
Going off of like the scale of it, the costumes in it also,
Incredible.
it's wild that almost all of these costumes were like not even like they were like made by like designers. Like they were like Prada, they were like Brooks Brothers, Tiffany and Company. Like the budget on this movie, like okay, so the budget was like $100 million, and it made 300 million, like over $300 million. But
Yeah.
I think also like if I'm not mistaken, I think she did the costumes for this, but His wife does like the costumes and production design for like the majority of his movies, if not all of them.
That's really cool.
I think that it's more so like Baz Luhrmann is very like in tune with, not like in tune with, but like he's, even though he's like a director, like I feel like he's in the same circles as like fashion. So I feel like it's very much like designers and people will like want to work with him. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like
yeah.
He just guest edited like this month's issue of Vogue, but it's in Australia. Like I thought I was gonna get it, but he like did like directed like all the photo shoots and stuff, and he was like the editor of this month's Vogue. So
right.
It's like interesting to see like where, I don't even know what I'm getting at here. I guess like how I guess that's one of the reasons why Great Gatsby became so ingrained in our brains in like 2013, 2014. Because it being so tied in with like all these brands, and like even though we are like working middle class people, it's like we were on the internet, we were on Tumblr, like things like that are just like we're not like buying designer clothes, but that's what is like influencing. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
No,
like,
yeah,
all
literally.
These brands
like...
were working with this movie. So
and that,
it was just, like, perpetually being, like...
Yes.
Showed to us.
No, yeah, and that's, like, a very interesting angle to it, too, because, like, the movie and all of it's literally about, like, the roaring 20s, like, the rise of capitalism in America, and the promotions and the marketing and all that stuff. It's all, like, the most famous artists were on the soundtrack, like, all the most famous brands were promoting it. Like, it almost felt like a very on-the-nose... like kind of synergy because it almost added to like the point of the movie and the book and everything. Weirdly enough, I think because like one thing I was worried about when going into Elvis was not worried, but I was kind of curious how they would do it, because you know you see like Doja Cat's on the soundtrack and I'm
yeah,
like
it's a great song,
it's so good. And I was kind of wondering, because I love Doja Cat. I have nothing against Doja Cat, but I was like, how are they going to, like, fit this into an Elvis movie and not make it feel, like, out of place? And they do. They do a great job, just like they do in Gatsby. And they make it fit narratively well. Like, when, like, Jay-Z is, like, playing at a party scene in this movie, it's like, it feels like... I don't know how to describe it. It just feels right, because the way he, like, mixes it in with the classical music that's playing, because you know, like it'll start like with a guy playing the piano, but then they'll throw in the other song overlapping with it, and they just mix music in this movie really well. Like it's a very good mix of everything, and it all feels like. And there's a Lana Del Rey sized elf in the room that we haven't even talked about. Like
yeah. Really quick, before we get into Lana Del Rey, I
yes.
wanted to bring up, so about the Doja Cat song in Elvis.
Yes.
Have you seen Baz Luhrmann's TikTok account?
I have not.
Okay. It is literally one of the funniest things I've ever seen for, like, no reason. He treats TikTok like it's, like, a, like, behind-the-scenes featurette. Like, on, like, MTV or something,
right?
And each TikTok he'll slide into frame and be like in action, and he'll just like start the TikTok, but every
That's
single
cute.
TikTok has the same exact clip of the song Vegas by Doja Cat in it, because he's like trying to promote that song. Like every single one has the exact same snippet of it, and he tried to start a trend for people to dance to it, and like only a few people did, and rather than like commenting on their videos and being like, oh, like awesome, cool, he'll like duet them, and he'll just like critique them like with like like voiceover, like it'll just be a video of him like just like watching these people dance, and one of them he's like yes, and like the girl's name is Enola, and he's like yes Enola slay. I highly recommend watching his TikTok.
It's so
fucking funny. But, like, you'll be, like, scrolling through. It'll just be the same exact clip of the Doja Cat song, so it'll get stuck in your head. But, like, it's so funny. It's hilarious. I'll send it to you later.
Yeah, he, that Doja Cat song is so fucking good. I'm trying to remember who else is on the soundtrack for, Eminem's on it, I think. If I'm mistaken. My God. Which is, like...
So he's singing the Venom song.
Yeah, it's just Venom in the Elvis movie. Yeah, it has kind of a wild soundtrack, just like Gatsby does, but I think both work pretty well.
Yeah. So Lana Del Rey.
Yes. I mean, what else is there to say other than... I mean, Lana Del Rey, is there a more, like, at least in our teenage years, is there, like, a more damning... I'm not saying she's, like, the most... pivotal, the most important, the best, or anything, but as far as like her reach on our like generation,
mm-hmm.
and how everyone from our age group that was at least a little bit online like knew mm-hmm. every song that she had,
yeah.
like I feel like this is gonna be our only opportunity to talk about like this on the pod, but like it can't be overstated, like
Lana Del Rey's impact.
Yeah, like on us, like our
yeah.
age group specifically.
Also,
like you really had to be there.
The mindset of like I feel like when people are like, oh, like this artist is a terrible influence on like young girls. Like I'm not saying that Lana Del Rey is a terrible influence, but I think she is
right.
first and foremost like. The artist that I have seen the most direct influence on a generation of women's views of relationships and beauty standards and like self-image.
Yeah.
Like just speaking personally and from like people's online personas and people that I've known, yeah, I think Lana Del Rey's impact cannot be understated.
Yeah. Yeah, and not even to say, like, I support it or anything, because the funny thing about Lana now is that she's corny as hell. I mean, she's always kind of been corny, but, like...
Yeah.
Especially
I think the funniest thing is, like, that she just dresses like just some person. Like, literally, she just wears, like, flip-flops, denim shorts, and a t-shirt.
Yeah, she's a funny lady. I think that's the only way you can put it. Because she, I mean, from like, I would say what, 2012 to like 2014,
mm-hmm.
her hold on all of us was like so deep. And then it's like almost like when 2015 hit, it was like magic. Like it just disappeared.
I feel like the last good thing that she did, I mean, like I was like a really big fan of hers.
Same.
But I kind of, like, fell off a little bit. Norman fucking Rockwell was really, really, really good.
Yeah.
That was, I don't even know when, like, 2018, maybe? But...
Yeah, 18, 17. I can't remember exactly, but around that time.
That was really good. But
right.
Since then, she just kind of, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Didn't she, like, date the host of, like, Live PD or something?
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, I knew she dated a cop, which I find very funny.
Something like that, yeah. Like, he wasn't just a cop. Like, he was, like, the host
right.
of, like, Live PD.
Which is so fucking funny. Like, of all the people to date, like,
mm-hmm.
him, yeah. Very funny.
And then, like, in the span of, like, 2 months, it was, like, she went out and had, like, a big event at a Barnes & Noble wearing, like, a mask that was just made out of mesh that had, like, no protection and was, like, pulling it down, like, before the vaccine even existed.
Yeah.
Like, to, like, take pictures of, like, with her fans. She was, like, taking pictures of people's faces at, like, Black Lives Matter protests and, like, posting it online. She said something about, like... It, like, I don't remember what the context was, but it was, like, she, like, specifically named, like, oh, like, Beyonce, Rihanna, like, Ariana Grande, like, all these women can, like, sing about, like, sex and be like rewarded for it, but when women look like me, like, and it was just like very like,
right,
she's the kind of person where like she should have just never had like social media or like said anything publicly other than her music. Not trying to like silence her, but like,
oh, I am, yeah.
When you have that kind of persona and you want to like keep up your persona through like 8 studio albums or whatever the fuck she did, like,
yeah,
you should probably just like not talk online.
That's actually a very good point, because I think that could is like really what it could be tracked down to, because she was so cool when she was mysterious and mm-hmm. she became corny when she talked. Like, I
yeah.
Yeah. So that's actually a very good point, because yeah, like literally, like, because if I'm not mistaken, she didn't really have a social media presence in 2013 2014, like vaguely, like to promote albums, but like she didn't say shit on social media, I don't remember, which is like what I remember, like everyone was like clinging on to interviews so deeply to her, and now that all her thoughts are public, it's just like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know the lady, so I don't want to, like, but it's pretty weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it cannot be denied her impact on, as, at least on, like, me as a youth. Like, every yeah. girl in high school was, like, listening. Everyone was, not even girls, just, like, everybody was listening to, Lana back in the day. And when it was announced that she was going to be on the soundtrack for this, like, the earth shattered, you know.
It was like an underdog was winning.
No, literally, it was insane. And like, that is, I mean, there's a lot of like great songs on the soundtrack, but that is the song on the soundtrack, you
it's
know what
like
I mean,
the love theme of the movie.
No, literally, like, it's the pivotal moment, you know, when Gatsby is like showering her with love. It's like,
When
Gatsby.
Calling him great just gives me the energy of when RuPaul was like, he thought that Evan Hansen's name was like Dear Evan Hansen. He was like, and thank you to Ben Platt, who gave everything when he played Dear. I'm sorry, go on.
No. I just...
First name great, last name Gatsby.
She great on my Gatsby.
She great on my Gatsby.
She gats on my spee.
I guess the Lana Del Rey thing, like, it could bring us back to like the whole Tumblr of it all. Just gifs of this movie and like lines from this movie just all over the Tumblr feed. Beyond that, though, it's like, this makes me nostalgic. I said it in the beginning for the era when I first started on Film Tumblr, and it makes me nostalgic for the era when we first met, which was the early days of me being on Film Tumblr.
Yeah.
And seeing all these GIFs all over the place. I feel like this movie, like, and I don't want to like go and cover every single fucking 2013 movie.
Right.
But like, I feel like this movie, like, Place Beyond the Pines, Drive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, I don't know if Place Beyond the Pines was later, but like Drive was all over the timeline.
Yeah.
I can't even think of what else. But it was like all movies from,
I feel like maybe it was just my side of Tumblr, but like Silver Linings Playbook,
yes.
was a big one. I'm trying to remember. Perks of Being a Wallflower is huge, huge,
which
huge.
We'll talk about one day.
Probably this year, right? We're going on this year's the 10-year anniversary.
Oh yeah, yep.
Yeah. So
I knew an anniversary was coming up.
Yeah, this year. So that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's a we could do a whole like coverage on like Tumblr cinema, almost. You know, like it's a genre within itself, almost. So yeah, look out for that maybe one day.
Yeah. We're just gonna really quick take a break for a word from some of our sponsors. Thanks, guys. friends. Do you love movies? Do you just spend your days thinking about how much you love to watch them? The good ones, and even the bad ones everyone told you not to like. It sounds like Superyaki is the place for you. The team at Superyaki loves movies, so much so that they've dedicated every waking moment of their life to bringing you top quality merchandise to showcase your love for them. From super soft t-shirts celebrating the cinematic achievement that is the 2001 classic Josie and the Pussycats, to comfy sweatshirts that serve as a call to arms for all those in support of making Judy Greer America's lead. They even have pins of some of your favorite directors, like Sofia Coppola and Jordan Peele. Superyaki joyously brings you tangible love letters to movies and filmmakers that you can wear with pride. Plus, the team at Superyaki screen prints all their apparel using eco-friendly, 100% water-based inks and ships with compostable poly mailers for an environmentally friendly alternative to online shopping. As a special treat to our listeners, we have a discount code. In all caps, enter SUPERZILLENIAL at checkout for 10% off. If the spirit moves you, find them at superyaki.com. Let's watch more movies, guys.
But no, I mean, and also the cast in this movie, too. I mean, everyone just feels kind of perfectly cast.
Yeah, Isla Fisher-Check, literally.
Isla Fisher-Check. Yeah, I think everyone does a really good job in this movie. Joel Edgerton is really good. Tobey Maguire is great.
The second the movie began, I was like, this is inherently Zillennial. Like, there's no argument because it features Z-Canon Lifetime Achievement Award winner Tobey Maguire.
It's funny because this came out a little bit after his tenure with Spider-Man was over, because I think they shot this in like 2011 ish because it was supposed to come out on Christmas Day in 2012, if you remember. But then they pushed it to a summer release. I guess when they kind of realized it wasn't going to be like an awards kind of player, they pushed it, and they thought they might get their money back better as a summer movie, which what you said it made like $300 million. Mm-hmm. It seems like it did, and honestly, like in retrospect, I think it works better as a summer movie than a Christmas movie. It's kind of wild in that way. But that's the main get. Like, Leo as Gatsby is just something that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just something that, like, the second he speaks in this movie, you're like, yep, that's Jay Gatsby. Like, that's him. Like, that, it's like one of the most seamless, no-brainer castings of all time. Because he just, like, it's not a hot take to say that Leonardo DiCaprio is a very good actor, but he just really nails the insecure. I mean, obviously he nails the suaveness, the handsomeness, the larger than life elements of Gatsby. But what I love about his portrayal is that he nails those like little moments of anxiety and like trepidation and like regret so thoroughly. Like he balances that beautifully in this movie. And he just, like, every angle to Gatsby, he, like, fucking nails it. To the point of where it's almost like, I don't want to sound like a boomer, because you know how, like, boomers are like, you can never do it as good as the original. I'm aware this is not the original, there will be other Gatsbys, but I may have to be a boomer in the future and be like, I cannot imagine anyone else playing it as good as he does in this movie. Because he's, like, he's it, you know what I mean? Like, that's... He embodies everything I imagined when I read the book. You know?
Yeah.
He's so good in this.
Fun fact, Scarlett Johansson was supposed to play Daisy and left because of Cameron Crowe's We Bought a Zoo.
Really?
I'm sorry.
That's really fucking funny. I mean, clearly she made the right call. that's
so
really
funny. Oh my god,
I think Scarlett Johansson's a very good dramatic performer when she needs to be, but that being said, Carrie Mulligan's where it's at.
Great, because she has that kind of like this is like the list of people that were kind of like on like on the list for Daisy: Amanda Seyfried, Keira Knightley, Jessica Alba, Rebecca Hall, Blake Lively, Abby Cornish, Michelle Williams, and Scarlett Johansson. And
Keira Knightley would have made too much sense.
Yeah. Did I say Natalie Portman?
No, Portman, but that makes sense too. I could see, for some reason, I can really imagine Natalie Portman delivering that line. Gatsby? What Gatsby? Like, I can see that perfectly.
That Carey Mulligan though has like that like kind of like I hate describing like grown women like she has this like innocence about her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she has a very, like, playful, like, presence, and I think that kind of, like, I can see the other actresses, like, playing this role, like, more, like, straight.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I guess you kind of have to have, like, fun and, like, playfulness about you to, like, be in a Baz Luhrmann film, but, great. Yeah, I think that Carey Mulligan kind of, she has that, like, you know, I don't know.
No, she has a... I mean, obviously, I think she's, like, one of the best actresses of our generation. Like, she is... she's one of the best actresses working today. You know, I mean, any movie that you see her in, she's fantastic. She's just, mm-hmm. like... I think out of, honestly, every performer that you read off, she's probably my favorite, just period, of that bunch. Mm-hmm. Maybe Natalie Portman could give her a run for her money, but, like, Carey Mulligan is just... I mean, everything that she's in, she's fantastic. Every single movie. And she just has, like, that really good quality to her where... You're right. Like, there is an innocence to her and, like, a very, like, reserved nature to her. But she can, like, do anything. Like, her comedic time is always on point. Like, I know Promising Young Woman was, like, a very controversial movie. And, like, I don't think it's...
Oh, yeah. She's great in it.
I don't think she's... I don't think the movie's perfect by any means. But one thing is for sure. She's... fucking phenomenal in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of the best performances I've seen from anybody in quite a long time. And yeah, I mean, every time she's in a movie, she just proves that time and time again. I think she's really good in this. And honestly, like, the longing in this movie between, like, Gatsby and Daisy is, like, one of the most, like, sad things I've ever seen. It's, like, one of the best will-they-won't-theys of all time. And, spoiler alert, when they don't, it is, like... It's so... It, like, that's the thing about this movie and just, like, the story in general. It's so inevitable, but, like, so heartbreaking no matter how many times you see it or read it or hear it. Like, that's... It's just one of those great stories where you know the outcome, but every time you just hope it ends up differently. And it's, it's, like... That's what's so great about, like, this, like, story, and, like, it really feeds into, like, us when we were, like, younger, like, teens reading this, or book, or seeing the movie. Because, I don't know about you, but, like, tragedy sold to teens.
Yeah.
Like, tragedy was, that's why The Fault in Our Stars was, like, the biggest YA book when
we
were kids.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
Every YA book, I mean, maybe now it's not as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this kind of, like, goes along with, like, the whole, like, Lana Del Rey, like, romanticizing sadness shit, but it's,
yeah.
like, why was every single YA book about, like, death and
yeah.
or, like, mental illness or, like, eating disorders or something?
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
literally
yeah.
every single thing was just so tragic. It was, like... I don't know.
No, that's how I feel, too. Like, well, that's why I remember, I don't know, like, especially, like, I can't lie. When I was a teenager, John Green was very formative for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, undeniably. And I think
absolutely.
So many people can relate to that. And the thing is, like, I don't even regret that. Like, his work was meaningful to me. I don't think, I don't regret reading it at a young age.
Yeah.
'Cause it's part of me, you know.
I'm so happy that I didn't end up getting a John Green tattoo when I was 18.
Oh my god. That's... yeah, if you're an 18-year-old and you want to get a tattoo from your favorite author, don't.
Not to sound like a boomer, if you're 18 and you want to get a tattoo, wait like 6 months.
And if you still want it, maybe.
Maybe. And I say this as somebody with, like, 7 tattoos and, like, 5 of them are pop culture references. And I love all of them. Like, wait on it, guys.
No, yeah, that's a great point. I'm still yet to get a tattoo on my body. But, yeah, I want to. I just, I'm one of those, I overthink it. And
yeah,
I haven't found one that I think I'd be content with yet, but thinking, I haven't really looked. One day I'll get a tattoo. But no, I've heard so many stories of like friends that are like, I fucking regret this. Yeah. I have one friend, she has an infinity tattoo on her like wrist, and she, every time I see her or like someone makes fun of her for it, and she's like, yeah, I fucking hate it. Like, I was so fucking stupid. Yeah, no. God. Yeah, I know. Wasn't it like a trend, like, they would have like the pipe tattooed
from
Fault in Our Stars?
Oh no, it was like he like smoked cigarettes.
Oh, no, wait, no,
the book in The Fault in Our Stars was about the pipe or whatever.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
I think so. Yeah.
Although, now that you're mentioning the cigarette thing, what's the fucking corniest thing in all of
Oh, let's wait until we actually cover that movie to discuss that.
We need to cover that movie at some point.
I don't think there's a more Zillennial movie that we haven't covered yet than The Fault in Our Stars. What the fuck?
Well, I think it's because, like, for so long we've talked about movies from, like, our childhoods.
Mm-hmm. We gotta get into the teenhood stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's a little bit vaguer, because, like, it feels like, because, like, the childhood stuff is, like, that's at least 12 years. Like, anyone in Zillennial, like, that's a very vague thing. Like, we all, to an extent, grew up with, like, Madagascar, or, like, Shark Tale, or, like, Shrek, or The Incredibles, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, teenage years are, like, what, 4 to 5 years? And I feel like we all had, like, we all love the same kids' movies, but we all had, like, different teenage years. We all had, like, very different niche interests. But, yeah, there are plenty of movies that are, like, definitely, like, everyone at least saw them as a teen. I would say The Fault in Our Stars, the book and the movie, are both just, like, imperative to our generation. Like, so, for better or worse, truly. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it bred a lot of, like, unbearable stuff, just in culture, I think.
Yeah.
Namely, making it out in the Anne Frank house, I would say.
Oh, my God. But, making out in the Anne Frank house.
What's your favorite John Green book?
I loved Looking for Alaska when I was younger. I really, like, I don't remember anything from it, but I remember really liking An Abundance of Catherines. Do you remember that one?
I've actually, the Catherines one?
Yeah.
I never read it, but I remember, like, that always being the blind spot for me. Doesn't he have, like, a bunch of exes named Catherine?
Yeah.
Right. No, I never read it, but I know what it is. My favorite was Paper Towns. When I was a kid.
Yeah, because you're a Florida man.
Florida man, yeah.
Yeah.
And he grew up in Winter Park, where I live. So it's
cool.
It's very accurate. Yeah. I mean, no, actually, no, it's
SeaWorld. Yeah.
I was gonna say no, it's not actually, because they just climbed the fence. I'm like, boy, it's like 70 feet. Like, what are you talking about? You can't scale the SeaWorld fence.
Yeah.
You literally can't do that. That book, I mean, they're all, like, very corny books, but and you only understand this if you've read a John Green book, but there's something about those books that the dialogue is cheesy, and you know it's cheesy when you're reading it, but for some reason it just works in the moment.
I still have yet to watch the Looking for Alaska TV show.
It's good.
Interesting.
Just, like, I think the Paper Towns movie does a good job of, like, adapting the book and making it actually work. I think we're very lucky that we haven't gotten a straight up bad John Green adaptation yet, because it's so easy to fumble that. You know what I mean? I mean, I know that's very subjective, but I personally like all three that we've gotten. I think they have been, they were given to, like, actually good filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Sarah Polley did the Looking for Alaska show, I think.
I don't know.
I think so. I'm not completely sure about that. I'm trying to fact check myself as we speak. But I remember, I still prefer the Paper Towns movie to Looking for Alaska, but that being said, like, they did a really good job with that, because it's, first of all, that book's very dated. Very, mm-hmm. very dated. And naturally, because it's super old at this point, but they do a really good job with it. No, I think I'm making that up about Sarah Polley. I'm trying to see the showrunner. Yeah, I literally don't know. Whoever did it, I think they did a really good job with Looking for Alaska, because they tell the story in a very unique way, and it's well done. Oh yeah, that motherfucker, Charlie Plummer. Who, that's a guy. So I feel like the movie Palo Alto was mm-hmm. very prominent on Tumblr back in the day, but no one really saw it. They just retweeted or reblogged it.
That movie is my problematic fave, 1000%.
Oh, that movie's like, I don't think it's a bad movie, but it's very like, I could not watch it. Oh, I could not watch it again.
Very cursed.
Very, very cursed.
Speaking of, off on a tangent really quick, Gia Coppola, I watched Mainstream the other night.
Yeah.
Very weird movie.
Yeah, I wish it was better than it was. I don't even dislike it. I just don't. I don't really have any opinions on it. I thought it was
very,
like,
very okay.
Yeah, it's like harmless, but it's not very effective either. It's weird. Yeah. I wish it had like more of a bite to it, because I mean it has like so many good people in it, and I get why they would want to be in a Coppola movie. A Gia Coppola movie, that is, because I like Palo Alto. I do. I think it's a, even though I'll never fucking watch it again. when I did see it, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. I didn't dislike Mainstream. It was kind of like a 5 out of 10 for me, I would say, where I thought many elements of it were great, namely like Andrew Garfield.
I love watching him just be insane. Literally, that's my favorite hobby, is watching Andrew Garfield be insane.
Oh yeah, he's great. He's so fucking good. Him playing like a kind of a cursed, like almost like performance artist in that movie is like, it's great. It's like he's really giving it his all. It's just the material isn't quite there for him, but it's not bad. It's just not good either. You know what's weird to me? Boz doesn't direct that many movies.
Yeah, because all his movies are like a fucking lifetime achievement.
No, literally.
Like, one movie every like 10 years is unhinged.
He somehow owns his own production company, even after that. Like, that's wild to me.
Didn't you know his name is Mark?
Really?
Yeah.
Then where the fuck did Boz come from? Who the fuck is Mark? This is like worse than when I found out that Vin Diesel was Mark Sinclair. Okay, yeah, what
both
the fuck?
Of them named Mark.
Well, yeah, what the fuck? Is Mark not good enough for you guys? Like, why do you have to change your names?
Yeah.
Yo, he's just like Gatsby for real.
Stop.
Maybe that's why he related to it so deeply.
He was given the nickname. Okay. The nickname Boz was given to him because of his hairstyle as a child, the name coming from an English puppet named Basil Brush.
That's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's kind of cute.
Boz, if you're listening to this,
that's stupid. I hope he is.
If he's like, listening to this, you can kick my ass, Boz, for free. But yeah. He's not, so I can say how fucking stupid that is.
Wait.
What?
Never mind.
Okay, cool.
Did you ever see Australia?
When I was a kid, weirdly, my mom.
Fucking insane.
My mom rented it. I remember being in the room, but I don't really remember how much of it I watched. I feel like it would flood back to me if I watched it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, I really don't even remember what it's about. I remember who's in it, but I don't remember the plot of it at all.
Yeah.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Hugh Jackman, Nicole Kidman. I already forgot everybody else.
I don't really know who else, but for some reason, in high school, I took a film studies class that was, not taught by, a film person.
Mm-hmm.
And I, knew more than the teacher. And the things that she chose for us to watch were just, the most insane choices, out of left field. I don't know why we watched them.
Right.
And Australia was one of them. And I'm just, for what reason? This is literally the most random movie I have ever seen in my whole life, that I've ever walked into a classroom in an art classroom and just sat down and watched and was asked questions about. It's literally she just felt putting that on that day, on a DVD player.
She rolls out a TV.
Literally. She's today we'll be talking about Baz Luhrmann's film, Australia. And it's okay, but we watched, Nightmare Before Christmas last week, so...
Yeah, clearly her priorities are a little bit out of whack.
Yeah.
Well, what was she trying to teach you with Australia, or did she even say anything?
Literally, she would just show us movies and then, ask us questions about the movie afterwards and was what was this character's name? It was, that kind of film studies class. That's so fucking funny.
Yeah. The most basic, context clues.
And then I would write, too much because I, enjoyed it. I would write it, for my own enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
She took my folder and presented it to the school board to prove that she was doing a good job in the class. I was like, bitch, I learned all this myself.
Is that, was her integrity brought into question, her productivity, was it brought up?
No, it was just she just used it as her end of the year portfolio.
Okay, right. I just imagine someone had to watch Australia and they fucking complained. They were like, "Yo, what the fuck are we doing here?"
Reporter to the school board because she made us watch Baz Luhrmann's Australia.
I'm pretty sure that's a defense. A federal offense.
It's literally, it's probably a good movie. It's just, the only reason why I'm ragging on it is because it's, the most random movie I've ever seen in my life.
And you need to watch in fucking class.
Yeah.
Movies are either better or worse. A class that
we weren't even, learning about the history of Australia in. it would make sense in that context. A global history class with, a portion of it about indigenous people in Australia, but
right,
no,
right. Yeah, it's funny. That's really funny because even if she's trying to teach you about any form of directing or mm-hmm. artistic merit, I think mm-hmm. even Baz fucking Luhrmann would agree that's the last movie of his portfolio that you should be teaching from. I bet she's one of those older people that has just a random assortment of DVDs and she just
absolutely
whatever. Because what else did you watch in that class?
We watched Nightmare Before Christmas because the scene kids wanted to watch it.
Yeah, that's how I also go through my curriculum, by what the scene kids want to watch.
Yeah, she basically was just what do you guys want to watch? And then she was, gonna show something for an animated segment, and then, like, they were like, no, let's watch Nightmare Before Christmas instead, and she was like, okay.
Okay.
So, like, yeah.
Right.
Oh, I just dropped my phone, sorry. I don't even remember. It was, like, the dumbest shit of all time. Like, I don't think I liked... Not that I didn't like one movie, but I didn't think one movie that we watched that semester was, like, should have been
right.
in a basic high school film studies class.
Right. Well, yeah. That's funny. I didn't even have a film studies class in high school. I had, we had a film club, but not, like, a film class. The closest we had was TV production, where they taught us about, like... actual like filmmaking and like how to use cameras and stuff. It was great.
I started with like film in high school because I had like an incredible like video production teacher, which was like how I like met Sean, and like she was like the best teacher I've ever had. Like she was really just like a mother figure to me. She's great. I still talk to her. But I took, because she used to teach film studies, I just basically like took as many classes as she taught so that I could just sit in the same room for like half of the day and not go to a different class.
Right.
So I took the film studies class, and then I found out like the day before the semester started that she wasn't teaching it that semester, that another teacher was teaching it that semester. So I would just basically, like, bring the curriculum, like, back to, like, my video production teacher and, like, talk shit about the film studies teacher to her. but, yeah. I definitely got, like, a film studies education from my video production teacher.
Interesting.
Which was great.
That's just how I felt, too.
She was, like, a great person.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I mean, I didn't really have, like, any attachment to the teacher herself. Like,
mm-hmm.
like she was cool, but we didn't, like, it wasn't, like, a big thing. But, mm-hmm. like, she did teach me, like, a lot of, like, very valuable information that I would say I honestly, like, learned more in those years that I was in her class. Because I had, like, multiple years with her. They were, like, tiers to TV production.
Mm-hmm.
You do TV production 1, 2, 3, and 4, actually. Mm-hmm. In my school, and by the end I like think I like fully learned, like she taught me how to like do you know like all like Adobe Premiere, Final Cut Pro. Yeah. I don't know, when I said Final Cut, I was about to say Final Cut, and I was like, no, that's the fucking Blade Runner Extended Edition. I'm like, what's it actually called?
Mm-hmm.
but no, she like taught me how to do like all that shit, and like I don't know, I genuinely think I learned more in her class than I did like, I don't know, doing anything else film related. So Miss G, if you're listening to this, thank you. You did good. And honestly, this came out when we were both in high school, this movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, this is, like, one of, in the era where, like, not that I, like, prior to this, I was, like, dumb when it came to film. Like, I can always appreciate good direction, even at a young age. But, like, mm-hmm. there were, like, certain things in this movie that were just, like, blatantly impressive, like, visually or in terms of, like... I don't know, just like shit that they pull off in this movie. Like, I feel like we were at the perfect age when this came out.
Yeah.
Where we were truly like impressed on like multiple levels about this movie.
Yeah, it was like what I said about like Jurassic Park, where it's like you're seeing something that you've never seen before on a big mm-hmm. screen.
Yeah.
And that's really like what it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah, no, literally. I won't say it's a perfect movie. Like, I think, I don't even know what my issues with it are. I know it's not perfect, though. Like, it's weird. It's not a perfect movie. It's not, like, an all-timer or anything. It just really is, no other way to say it, it is, like, the Zillennial, like, how do I put it? Like, almost like the zillennial adaptation of a classic novel. Like, there is no better. It's like the bridging of, like, different generations. Like, it has, like, the most zillennial kind of, like, aesthetic to it. The most zillennial artists. The most zillennial, like, honestly, actors. Like, because, like, I'm not saying, like, but, like, you know, Tobey Maguire is super, like, formative for a lot of us. Like, Leo. I mean, that's an actor that he was, like, just throughout our lives. You know what I mean? And yet, you take such, like, a classic novel and you, like, inject it with all this stuff from, like, our teenage years. And it, of course, it's going to be nostalgic for us. Of course, it's going to be, like, such a big, like, event for us. Because I, honestly, I remember, like you said, like, not only was, like, prom and, like, homecoming, like, Gatsby themed, but, like, I remember coming back that summer and, like, people would, like, or, like, the teacher would, like, ask, like, what did you guys do this summer? And, like, so often, like, people would be like, we saw Great Gatsby. Like, it was, like, a point of conversation after it came out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They did a great job at, like, bringing it back into the forefront of pop culture again. And also, how many fucking times have you seen that gif of him, like lifting the champagne with the fireworks going off? Yeah.
Got to the point where it's, like, a meme now, kind of.
To my haters, thank you. There's so much more to come.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I have one of that where it says, to my haters, keep sucking.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really cool. I was kind of worried about rewatching it because I do have very fond memories with this movie. But I was actually pretty delighted to find out that I think it holds up pretty damn well last night. Again, I don't think it's a perfect film by any means, but as far as adapting the Grey Gatsby goes, I think it, I don't know, I think it goes out of its way, honestly, at points to, like, it's a little bit more thoughtful of a, because you could just, like, make a boring version of this where it just, like, adapts the themes and calls it a day. But the length that goes to like add like very flashy aesthetics and like the soundtrack and the visuals and like there's just so much there to it. Then honestly, I think it gets credit for. I think it got like box office and it got credit to an extent from like the performance angles. But I think honestly, Boz's direction and vision for this movie deserves more credit. And I hope maybe it has like kind of a, I don't know if anyone, like, hated this movie or anything, but it wasn't really, like, beloved either.
I feel like his movies are always very divisive.
Right. I predict that Elvis is going to be his, like, most actually liked
movie.
Most
divisive.
No, most I think liked. It's, like, I really don't think it's, I mean, because film Twitter's not real. I'm sorry. It doesn't exist in the real world. Like, I'm sorry. If you're on film Twitter, no, you're not. It doesn't exist.
If you see me on film Twitter, heart emoji. No, I'm not.
No, because it's, like, everything that, like, people complain about on there, you go to, like, a real-life person on the street, and they're like, what? Like, it doesn't matter. it literally doesn't fucking matter.
Exactly.
Like, it's such a, like, a little vacuum, and I find it so funny. That's why fucking, like, Top Gun Maverick is, like, making all the money in the world right now. It's, like... You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I know, like, Film Twitter loves that movie, too. But that movie is making money because it's not about anything. It's just fucking vibes, you know? It's so cool. But no, like, I think Elvis is going to be... Because I think it's actually his most, like, mature movie.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't, like, spare his style at any point in the movie. But I think he just out of any of his movies, he gives the most time for character work and, like, truly performance-driven scenes that is quite unlike anything I've ever seen him do in a film before, where he balances his own style and, like, direction and vision for the film with, like, very quiet, necessary, pivotal moments that you need to have when telling the story. Which is why I think, as far as the general public goes, I think it'll be his most accepted film.
Interesting. So,
It's really good. It's really good. I can't believe I'm saying it. I don't know which
Your
one I
brow's
prefer.
pilled.
Kind of, a little bit. It makes me actually. I don't know if I could ever rewatch Moulin Rouge because I just didn't enjoy it.
I would love for you to rewatch Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. Well, no. Heart emoji. But I'll make a deal with you. I will rewatch Romeo and Juliet one day.
Okay.
Because do you like that movie? I forgot.
Yeah, I do. I have a really cute dress, with a big image from it on it.
I need to rewatch it, I think, because
Yeah.
every time I tell people I don't like that movie, they're like shocked.
Well, you don't like Shakespeare.
I like if it's good, I like it. It's just like I think it's boring most of the time. Like, 'cause it's the same fucking story told over and over again. And like when, directors and I don't know, showrunners or whatever, like they don't do any. I think it's less about Shakespeare itself. I'm just saying, like, when, like, these people that take it, they don't take any liberties with it. And they're like, isn't this so great? I'm like, no, it's Shakespeare. Like, you're not doing anything new with it. It's just Shakespeare. Like, it's just boring after. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's the same fucking story. Like, I don't know why we're pretending like it's new and interesting. It's, like, not. It's like he's an old bitch. Like, I don't like, I. Like, I'm tired of pretending. Like, I need to give a shit about this guy. I don't. And I remember feeling that way about his adaptation because he. I feel like he went so close to, like, doing his own thing. But once you. Like, if you take out the time period setting in that movie, in the visual style, it's, like, literally just the same fucking thing. And I just don't think that's particularly interesting. But, or maybe I'll
Okay.
eat my words. Maybe I'll rewatch it. And again, this is like my 15-year-old opinion. You know what I
But
mean?
also young Paul Rudd is in it, so.
Is he? I didn't even remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. I'll look into
I
it.
don't think we should cover it, but I think you should watch it.
What year did he come out?
96? 96?
Okay. Yeah, well, I don't know.
All right.
That's your call. I can take it or leave it personally. But yeah, so how does this rank for you in terms of Boz movies?
I think this is pretty high tier. I think this is the most. I mean, like you said, that Elvis is like his most like
I
one with
would.
like the broadest appeal, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think it's his like most mature and accessible movie, I would say.
Yeah, I guess Gatsby's my favorite one. Moulin Rouge is, it's something. I mean, go back and listen to our Moulin Rouge episode. It's a lot of fun.
Very good
Adam did
episode.
not have fun, but it was a great episode. It was so much fun.
No,
But
that's a very good episode because Brad loves that movie so
yeah.
much, and listening to him talk about it, I really wanted to like it, like because he
Yeah.
loves it so much, and he has such good reasons for why he likes it that
You
I
felt
kind of,
so bad for not liking that movie when we
yeah,
recorded
no, because
that
he had such good takes, and I was just
Yeah.
like, wow, you're smarter than I am, okay, like I concede,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is my favorite Boz movie. The rest of them are just kind of vibes, like fun vibes to me. I don't know if it's the nostalgia aspect of this one or what, but you know, I don't know.
I think it really is like a lot of it's nostalgia, I think.
It
And
just
that's not a bad thing,
like
I don't think.
this movie just hit us at the right time.
It really did. And the thing is, the story itself is very it's classic, you know what I mean? Like it's a very timeless story. So I think adapting it with like a very millennial like 2010s aesthetic and like what our perception of like that is a very unique thing, you know? And like his vision for it, his vision for most things, whether I like it or don't like it, I always find it interesting, and it's always like with merit, you know what I mean? Like his vision for Elvis is like just, it's hard to even explain until you like fully watch the movie, but like you'll get it when it's over. And the same thing with Gatsby. It's like hard to fully put it to words, but it really is impressive how he takes all these like very prominent things of our culture and how we consume and indulge in capitalism and kind of mix it into a story about the Roaring Twenties and you know, for the pre-Great Depression era, and mixing it all together into like one really kind of beautiful, insane movie. It's great. I don't know. I think it's a great movie. I was actually kind of surprised that it held up as good as it did. I was half expecting it to be not as good as I remember, but no, it holds up perfectly, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tumblr. Shout out to the era of our friendship happening.
Yeah, I think I mean, because I'm trying to remember, what was like the first movie we like bonded over?
Well, we bonded over me having a dream that I broke into your house to make a grilled cheese
Well,
sandwich. That's how we
yes.
initially bonded, but I don't know beyond that. We just started talking one day and then we never stopped talking
We
and
never stopped and now I'm in her walls. No,
that's the only way to describe our friendship is that we just started talking one day, we never stopped.
Yeah, I was like STFU woman. No, it's a very funny story, and now we have a podcast. I think that's all you have to know about me
We
and
do,
Kira.
and we still never stop talking.
No, it's very great. I mean, what, we started talking in 2013, I want to say, around the time this came out, so weirdly it does feel fitting to talk about this movie with you, because we both very much grew up in the just in case you the listeners have not listened to earlier episodes where you have the context of Kira Adam lore. We met on Tumblr, we talked on Tumblr until I'm pretty sure I gave you my number like very quickly into it. And then after you had my number, we just never stopped texting, like ever. We just like learned everything about each other, and then we never stopped talking. And it feels right because we both very much grew up into that Tumblr era of like, I don't know,
We were
where
on
this all was
film
born.
Tumblr, not film Twitter. And then we
Well,
moved towards film Twitter. Well, we were on film Facebook too, but I don't talk about that era of my life.
I'm not proud of
Yeah, I don't like it. Yeah.
it was awful. It was a bunch of teenagers with God complexes talking about very mid movies, and I don't regret it for a second, but it's like it's definitely a very toxic part of dare I say both of our pasts.
Yeah.
It gave me a very warped perception of how I should like approach film, and the quicker that I moved away from that, the happier I became when it came to consuming media.
Yeah.
So shout out to anyone that was also part of Film Tumblr back in the day. Just
Yeah.
this episode's for you, honestly.
Just gifts, just vibes.
Just vibes.
Just gifts and me DMing Adam
I don't
saying, "Hey, I had a dream that I broke into your house and made a grilled cheese sandwich."
I don't think I've ever revealed my Tumblr username on pod, and I won't, unless we like raise $1,000 one day on Patreon.
Everybody Venmo Adam and he'll drop his. Did you ever change it or it's still the
No,
same?
it's still the same.
Oh. I'm
And
gonna be
it's
honest, I don't remember what mine is.
I know what yours is.
Hold on, let me just open the Tumblr app.
It
Oh, yeah, of course it's still this. Okay.
Yeah.
If you could find my Tumblr, feel free to follow it, but I update it like once a year.
I don't think I've updated mine in like... Dude, I couldn't tell you the last time I updated mine. But
7 months ago was when I last reblogged something.
Classic.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. Well, I mean, anything else? I can't think of anything else to say about this.
No.
It's very good. I'm gonna go back
and log into Tumblr.
Yeah, like I said, for anyone that was on Tumblr in 2013, this episode's for you. This episode is specifically for you guys. We talked about a lot of very niche Tumblr things, so I hope you guys, I hope like a majority of the people who listen to this actually could relate to it, instead of just like sounding like complete nonsense the entire episode. Because I could very much see someone listening to this episode and that was not on Tumblr just being like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Like, I think it's a good, like, first of all, I think like people who were on Film Tumblr in 2013 and our listeners, I think that Venn diagram is a circle.
It's a very, yeah, yeah.
But also, I think that it, like, the whole, like, aesthetic aspect of it kind of, like, made its way to Twitter eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a pretty general, like, generation, you know.
Right. No, I mean, fair. Yeah, I like that. I like the idea that people know what we're talking about and we don't sound crazy. And that people relate to it. I love that idea. I love that idea. That's so fun to me.
People don't think that we're crazy. It's awesome.
But yeah, otherwise, I don't know, is that it? I think, yep. Right? Okay, I think cool. I was trying to think of like one last thing to say, but I think I've said my piece. You can find me going to a fucking huge ass party and not being able to find the owner of the party and cucking his wife and yeah. No, you can find me on Twitter at @Adam_NotSandler. My other podcast, Aggressively OK, where we are also aggressivelyok.com. We are, you know, we're reviewing movies back and forth. Me and Joey just did an episode the other day on Barry season 3, which Kira, are you caught up? I forgot.
I am, yeah. Epic. Pretty stressful.
It's very good. We were just kind of screaming at each other for like a bunch of that episode. But what a great season. What a great time to talk about it. We talked to Lightyear recently, which spoiler alert, I loved actually. So yeah, a lot of good stuff out there. I'm blanking on everything that's alright. I feel like at the end we always talk about stuff we've watched.
Yeah.
Marcel, The Shell with Shoes On, very good movie. I saw that tonight. Loved it. And I'm seeing The Black Phone tomorrow, which I'm excited about. So, yeah, keep an eye on that on the sites and stuff.
I saw today, what's that British movie called again?
Brian and Charles.
Brian and Charles, yeah, I saw which, that. That was cute.
Yeah.
It was really sweet.
Yeah.
Movies
are good.
Yeah. I actually saw in a theater at a Julie Andrews retrospective the musical Victor Victoria. And Julie Andrews was there and did a little Q&A after. Incredible, incredible film. Literally, like, instantly one of my favorite movies of all time. So
I've never even heard of it, but I'll look into it.
I think you would like it a lot.
I bet, yeah.
I think that you would. It's so much fun.
I mean, I do love her, so yeah. I'm down. Yeah.
It's wonderful. Yeah, I mean, like you said, Lightyear, it's cute, I guess.
I had a really good time with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I already brought up mainstream. It's fine. It's streaming on Showtime if you want to watch it.
Yeah, there's good stuff out there. Or just rewatch The
Yeah.
Great Gatsby, honestly.
Yeah, rewatch The Great Gatsby. Elvis is coming out this week.
Oh yeah, Elvis, good movie.
Yeah.
I go see all of it. There's so many good movies coming out. Go
That's
just go
like the
see all
reason
of
why we did this episode.
it.
You can follow me on Twitter at garlic emoji. You can follow us on Twitter at zillennialcanon, on Instagram at thezillennialcanon. Give us some ratings, some reviews, and we will see you guys next week.
Yeah, I'm it's TBD on
Yeah.
what I choose. I think it's my choice next
It
week.
is your choice, yeah.
I gotta like really we've been doing too many good movies lately, like Jurassic Park, Great Gatsby.
Yeah, we gotta do something awful.
Oh, I
No,
have a
not awful.
few
Please
I
not
have a few
awful.
Bionicle movies in mind. Although there is a movie that Kira pitched to me last night. And
Oh shit, I don't even remember. I gotta scroll back in
it's
our
a certain
texts.
concert movie based off a certain show.
Oh, not yet, not yet.
No, but I was like, she said, "Would you hate me if I made you watch this movie for the pod?" And I was like, "I might actually, like, I might actually hate
If
you."
you follow me on Twitter, you know what show I've been watching.
God damn it, I can see where this is going, and I don't know if I like it. But yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see you guys next week.
Definitely not doing the Glee concert film. Okay, bye
Bye,
guys.
Kate.
Has been entertaining us America's